I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS's Top of the Morning. Today we turn our focus back to the preferreds market and discuss how the space has been performing as of late relative to the broader markets. We will highlight some specific trends influencing the sector, how the current environment for preferred investors compares to that of the financial crisis, where opportunities exist within, and a whole lot more. Joining me here on the line for today's conversation, excited to welcome back Senior Fixed Income Strategist Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Frank Saleo. So Frank, good morning. Great to be with you as always, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan. Great to speak with you again.
So, Frank, I know we want to hit on quite a few items within the preferred space throughout the course of our conversation this morning. Maybe we can simply begin with a performance review. So I know efforts to contain the spread of the coronavirus or COVID-19 have thrown the global economy and financial markets into turmoil. That's very well documented. The S&P 500 just had its worst quarterly performance since the financial crisis, so that's dating back over 10 years. How has the preferred sector performed relative to the broader markets?
Yeah, it's a good setup. It's been really, things have been tough all over, really. It's been a very tough quarter for the preferred sector as well. Basically, the past 6 weeks of the second half of the first quarter has been as difficult or in certain cases more difficult for the preferred sector than most other risk asset sectors out there. There's just been a tremendous amount of volatility, especially in March. And just for some context, if we look at the $25 par preferred market specifically, the $25 par preferred market had one of its worst one-day declines in the history of the preferred market. That occurred on March 18th, so just about 2 weeks ago. The preferred sector, as measured by one of the oldest preferred securities indexes, the preferred $25 par preferred market dropped by 12% on that one day, March 18th. And of course, that one day drop contributed to a weekly decline of nearly 15% for the entire week. That was 2 weeks ago. Then last week, we did get somewhat of a rebound, but the sector was up by nearly 13%, rallying along with the S&P 500 and other risk assets. This helped recoup some of the losses, but still, $25 par preferreds were down nearly 9% in March, down 11% in the first quarter. That, again, being the $25 par preferred sector. If we toggle over to the $1,000 par preferreds, they generally fared worse. They were down by 14% for both the month and the quarter. Just putting this into context, if we look at other traditional fixed income sectors, Dan, we see treasuries had a great quarter. Of course, treasuries being the risk-free asset of choice for investors during these periods of flight to quality. Treasuries were up by 8% in the first quarter. Municipal bonds were kind of flat, so definitely could have been worse. Munis basically gave back the gains that they incurred in January and February during the month of March. So the muni bond sector was flat for the quarter. Investment-grade corporates down 3%. And high yield down by about 13% in the first quarter. So preferreds relative to traditional fixed income definitely faring worse, generally speaking. But if we compare preferreds to other what we call yield assets, for the preferred sector sometimes gets lumped in with REITs and MLPs, those performed worse than preferreds. REITs were down 7% and MLPs down by more than 50% in the first quarter. And again, as you mentioned, the S&P 500 having its worst quarter since the financial crisis over 10 years, down 20%. So basically, Dan, things were tough all over, and preferreds were right in the mix, did not come out of the quarter unscathed.
Frank, appreciate that broader performance review and some context in terms of how the preferred space had performed during that period relative to the broader markets. Maybe if we drill down a bit deeper, can you speak to the typical performance drivers within preferreds, and then what specific trends have been pressuring the sector as of late?
Sure. Well, investors are attracted to the preferred sector because of the steady coupon payments and because of the yield. So as a result, preferreds are very yield sensitive. And the thing to keep in mind, the thing to remember, is that yield can be broken down into two components. an interest rate component and a credit spread component. So those two pieces, interest rates and credit trends, are the two main drivers of performance in the preferred space. Frankly, those are the two main drivers in most fixed income sectors, but specifically in the preferred space. The interest rate component is usually expressed by treasury yields and the treasury yield curve, and the credit spread is expressed through a yield premium over comparable maturity treasury rates. And so when risk aversion spikes, when risk tolerance plummets, when we get this flight to safety like we've seen over the past 6 weeks, investors demand higher yield premiums. And in terms of what we saw in the past 6 weeks, in February and March, investors aggressively repriced risk in the preferred sector, pushing those credit spreads and those yield premiums to multi-year highs. At the same time, we had this flight to safety, the flight to quality, that pushed treasury yields to record lows. If we look at the 10-year treasury yield, for example, we began the year close to 2%, and we're down today at about 0.6. We're seeing record lows in treasury yields across the curve. And a lot of times people look at those falling treasury yields, those falling treasury rates, and they say, hey, interest rates, as represented by treasury yields, are falling. Isn't that good for all fixed income? Well, not quite. When we look at preferred and other fixed income sectors, they're often referred to as spread product or spread sectors. So what we typically see in high yield and the preferred sectors and some others is that the benefit of those lower interest rates, the benefit of the lower rates in treasuries is overwhelmed by this risk repricing that I described, overwhelmed by higher yield premiums, by higher credit spreads. And when it comes to preferreds, Dan, this represents a really sharp reversal from the spread levels that we were at just a few weeks ago. Just 6 weeks ago, preferred spread levels were at or near historic lows. And that's because the reach for yield and related spread compression was a major performance driver last year. In 2019, that reach for yield and that compression in spreads is what drove preferreds to a gain of more than 17% in 2019. And we saw preferred spreads compress by 100 basis points last year, again, to historic lows. And if I think back 6 weeks or so ago, back to mid-February, it was on another Top of the Morning podcast, a conversation, Dan, that you and I were having, I think it was February 20th, right before the crisis hit, and we talked about the preferred sector. We were doing one of these conversations about the preferred market, and one of the things we talked about is spreads at that time were at historic lows, and we talked about the fact that there was a very thin margin for error in the preferred space when we look at these yield premiums, no cushion to absorb any type of market disruption, and of course that was the backdrop against which we got hit with this exogenous shock, this global pandemic. So we saw a sharp reversal in those spread trends. I mentioned spreads tightened in about 100 basis points throughout the course of the year in 2019. Well, they gapped out 400 basis points in just the past 6 weeks. And then we also saw a sharp reversal in another major support, and that's ETF flows. The $25 par preferred market is relatively small. It's only about 15% the size of the U.S. high yield market. And there are about a dozen ETFs out there that specialize in the preferred market. And today they own about 20% of the $25 par market, $25 par preferred market. So when inflows into those ETFs are strong, as they had been for most of 2019 and into early 2020, it provides a major support, which at times represents almost forced selling because these ETFs are index funds, passively managed. Conversely, when those flows flip from inflows to outflows, it can have a materially negative effect and forced selling. So for most of 2019, those flows were very supportive. We saw inflows of approximately $150 million per week throughout 2019 and into February. Doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it is relative to the size of the $25 par preferred market. But in March, those inflows of approximately $150 million per week, in March, they flipped to outflows. Two consecutive weeks, we saw outflows of $640 million and $720 million, respectively. And we also saw redemptions from mutual funds, closed-end funds, and other portfolios. So in summary, Dan, the major culprits behind the selling pressure in the preferred space were wider spread and asset outflows, and sometimes representing forced selling out of the sector, Dan.
Frank, you did make mention of our February 20th top of the morning conversation, which, of course, can be located up on ubs.com/daily market guidance. And a lot has certainly changed since our prior conversation. But I do want to point out that you've made the distinction a few times this morning between the $25 par and the $1,000 par preferreds. Maybe in the way of an education for our listeners, can you spend a few moments touching on the key differences and how have those differences impacted performance over recent time?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, from a capital position perspective, from the issuer's perspective, there's really no difference. Perpetual preferred stocks occupy the same position in the issuer's, the preferred issuer's capital structure, regardless of that par value. So preferred stocks, regardless of par value, will have a higher claim on assets and a higher claim on income than common stock, but still be subordinate to all forms of debt and bonds. But logistically, $25 par preferreds tend to be exchange listed. They're often listed on the New York Stock Exchange or other stock market. And so for $25 par preferreds, you can pull up the price very easily on your phone. For $1,000 par preferreds, on the other hand, these tend to trade over the counter, kind of like a municipal bond or an individual corporate bond. If listeners have ever purchased those, they trade in the same way over the counter. Those are the $1,000 par preferreds. Also, when we see the structure of the $25 par preferreds versus the $1,000 par preferreds, again, in the capital structure is the same, but the structure of the actual security, we find that the $25 par preferreds tend to have a fixed rate coupon structure, sometimes called fixed for life, whereas in the $1,000 par preferred market, these coupons tend to be structured as fixed to floating rate coupons. And basically, it's just what it sounds like. This $1,000 par preferred pays a fixed coupon up until the first call date, and then if it gets called at the very first possible call date, then it looked and felt and acted just like a fixed rate preferred. But if it doesn't get called at the first call date, the fixed to floating rate preferred is designed at that point to have the coupon transition from a fixed rate to a floating rate. The floating rate is designed to reset quarterly based on the prevailing LIBOR rate in the future, which is unknown, plus a predetermined reset spread, which is known. So you put the two together, and that's how you calculate. That's how they're designed to calculate the floating rate. Now, March was a difficult month for both $25 and $1,000 par preferreds, but the $1,000 par preferreds did underperform, as I alluded to earlier. This is most likely due to the fact that most $1,000 par preferreds tend to have that fixed to floating rate coupon. And what we saw in March was we saw the Fed aggressively cut short-term rates by 150 basis points intermeeting, which has never happened before. And so floaters and fixed to floats that will soon be approaching their first call date and transitioning to a floating rate are likely to see lower coupons for the foreseeable future. Those coupons are likely to float, but float lower. It's as simple as that. The coupon will be floating lower against a backdrop in which risk premiums are rising. So that's really, again, it's as simple as that. That is really what has created the pressure for floaters and fixed to floats nearing first call date. But from a more technical perspective, fixed to floats and approaching their first call date are evaluated based on those reset spreads that I mentioned. The reset spread represents compensation for credit risk. And of course, given the spike we've seen in yield premiums, in risk premiums, the market is now calling for higher reset spreads and higher coupons. And we see this everywhere. So for example, if we look at corporate bonds, there were several major banks that issued new 10-year senior unsecured corporate bonds in just a few weeks ago in late March. But the coupons, the 100 to 150 basis points higher than they are on 10-year bonds that these same banks issued in January and February. And, of course, the bonds issued in January and February with lower coupons are trading at lower prices as a result. So given the surge that we've seen in market yields, in risk premiums, new preferred fixed-rate coupons would likely be, you know, close to 6% or more. New reset spreads would probably be in the 500 basis points area. But because there are very few floaters or fixed floats with reset spreads in that area, many of them are under pressure. And that will likely to continue to be the case until we see a reversal in those trends. Basically, Dan, we need to see market yields begin to fall back toward levels that were prevalent prior to the crisis. And we need to see short-term rate expectations begin to rise, expectations that the Fed will again be looking to hike rates. But it'll take a while.
So, Frank, I know we only have a few minutes left. We want to touch on a couple of more points before we wrap up. But I've heard many times people drawing comparisons to the current environment to that of the financial crisis of 2008, 2009. How does it compare from the perspective of a preferred stock investor?
Yeah, well, I mentioned that March 18th one-day drop. It was one of the worst days in preferred stock history. So over the past 30 years, the index had a steeper one-day decline only twice. And both of those declines happened during the financial crisis. So the experience does feel similar, but we have to put this into context. Many preferreds are issued by banks, so that is a major focus. But banks today have stronger balance sheets and are better capitalized than they were before the financial crisis. The Dodd-Frank Act was enacted after the crisis. It now requires banks to hold roughly twice as much capital relative to their risk-weighted assets than the banks had in 2007. We also, when it comes to the largest banks, what are referred to as systemically important financial institutions, those are subject to annual stress tests and capital analysis and reviews. These are all tests to look at the minimal capital and liquidity requirements. And additionally, the underwriting and loan quality of these banks has improved. So overall, the banking system is much better shape. I would point out a lot of this was highlighted in a recent blog post to the Intellectual Capital portal, a blog post that was lead authored by co-authors Dan Kelch and Brad Ball, kind of reviewing the regulations that are currently in place, that have been put in place since the financial crisis, that are making the banking system much stronger today than it was before the crisis.
Frank, maybe one more point. Well, 2 points, really, as we begin to look forward. What's your outlook for the preferred space? And that might be difficult to say. I know how fluid the current environment is right now. Are there any other segments as well that preferred investors can find value?
I appreciate it's a good point that you made about the difficulty, because we are going through a difficult period right now. It's a period that, you know, seemed unimaginable just a few months ago. And it's a period in which nothing like this has ever happened before. Think about it. Policymakers are purposely shutting down the economy, and this is happening globally. Global policymakers are looking to shut down the economy to fight this global pandemic with the expectation that once we succeed in this effort, we can then restart the economy. So policymakers are aiming to implement monetary policies and fiscal policies that stay ahead of the damage from the economic shutdown. The economic shutdown is aiming to stay ahead of the damage from the spread of this virus. So it all hinges on the rate and pace of those daily confirmed cases. That's why we've all had to change our daily lives. And, of course, we're all in this together. And I do want to highlight in the latest House View Investment Strategy Guide, the CIO at UBS, the Chief Investment Officer, outlines 3 scenarios that may unfold as it relates to financial markets: an upside, a central, and a downside scenario. And under the upside and central scenarios, we expect an economic rebound by year end, corresponding with a V or U-shaped recovery. In the downside scenario, however, it's more like an L. And under that downside scenario, all risk assets would suffer material losses. And again, it hinges on the success of the virus mitigation efforts. Now, at CIO, our asset allocation is positioned to benefit from sectors that are likely pricing in more of that downside scenario than others. So from a preferred investor perspective, remember, take advantage of the forced selling that may occur from time to time from ETFs. Don't sell into weakness. While you're doing that, while you're focusing on not selling into weakness, looking to take advantage of forced selling, if you're seeing preferreds that are trading well below par value on high volume, focus on higher quality issuers among the highest quality banks. As I mentioned, they're in much better shape than they were before the financial crisis. Utilities are also, from time to time, seeing their preferreds under pressure. Focus on those high quality issuers. Focus on good call protection and good fixed coupon, 5 to 5.25% or better. Many $25 par preferreds match this description. They're from investment grade issuers. Many of them have sold off and some are even selling below par today. And that represents good value. When it comes to fixed to floating rate preferreds, Dan, whether they're the $1,000 par variety or there are a handful of $25 par fixed to floats, when it comes to this structure, focus on call protection, high reset spreads, and be aware of what might happen to the preferred coupon if LIBOR is discontinued in 2022. It's important to keep in mind the prospectus language related to coupon calculation in the absence of LIBOR, and we've got some research report on that subject as well. So, as I mentioned, we're all in this together. It may get worse before it gets better, but, you know, look for the opportunities to focus on high quality. That's where you'll find the value.
Well, Frank Soleo, very helpful conversation this morning. Again, walking us through the preferred sector, recent performance drivers, and talked about some comparisons that can be drawn to the 2008-2009 financial crisis, an outlook for the preferred space and where investors can find value within. I also want to highlight, as you alluded to, you do have a number of pieces relevant to our conversation up on UBS Online Services, two intellectual capital blogs, Pondering Preferreds, What's Next for Fixed to Floats, that was authored on March 31st. You also have the blog out, U.S. Banks Amid the Volatility, A Reminder of the Benefits of Regulation, that was authored on March 26th. And then finally, the Top Picks Portfolio publication, the monthly update for March, Preferreds Not Immune to Violent Risk Reprice, and that was authored on March 23rd. But Frank, again, great speaking with you this morning. Appreciate your time and insights, and look forward to connecting again with you soon.
Likewise. Thanks a lot, Dan, and stay healthy and safe, everybody.
Thank you, Frank. You as well. And again, we have been joined this morning by Frank Soleo, Senior Fixed Income Strategist Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Top of the morning. We'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.